Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Reich Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are on my direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload something to that once a week. Been super busy since the start of the year, but I'm going to make this pact to you guys right now. I will give you an episode every week. Minimum 12 weeks in a row. I will make sure that I have some sort of kickboxing content for you. I just been so crazy busy, but I'm freed up now. And even as we speak, I am on location in Mexico City, and I'm working a fight. My fighter Mark De La Rosa is going to be the main event on Fight Pass tonight for Combat America. So forgive me for the delay, but I want to make sure that I sit down, give you the right content, and get this information to you in a way that you can enjoy it, learn from it, love it, and I apologize for the big gaps. One more thing, the other and most efficient way to get my podcast is on iTunes. Enter Warman Kickfighting Show or enter Lord Gaul and the show pops right up. Going to go ahead and jump into the kickboxing action. Before I get into the glory card, I just want to talk about a couple of news and notes that kind of emerged lately. First of all, I want to talk about the Kuai Jin Liang KO versus Kam Sitsong Ping Yang. And the reason why I bring that up is, of course, it came around on Twitter because if you get the right angle or if you get a certain angle, it super looks super questionable. You know, it makes you wonder what actually happened. And, you know, I am for one of the camp because I've seen Kam stop before. So I thought that it was a good shot. Spinning back kick, caught him with the heel. Landed a body shot shortly before, then there was a ref break, and then after the ref break, he does a spinning kick, and the way Jiang Ling falls, or excuse me, the way Kim Sitsong Pingyang falls from Jiang Ling's shot made me think, you know, okay, first I saw it, I was like, man, it's a good shot, and then another view of it made it seem, you know, like the way he fell looks questionable. He doesn't grab his side where he's hit, he just kind of falls in a very, you know, like he was devastatingly hit. But he doesn't grab the body part. I watch a lot of stadium fights in Muay Thai. Sometimes you'll watch a guy get stopped with low kicks, and they'll fall as if they got hit in the head. And the reason why is because they're mentally told to sell that they're okay even when they're not okay. And when they take their last kick, they just kind of go down. And I've seen people take body shots where they thought they were okay, try to go through it, and then the delayed effect brings them down. Not all the time is it going to be a situation where, you know, someone is, you know, hunched over and they're holding on to their side. Like, that's not necessarily going to be the case most of the time. All the time, I should say. Most of the time, they're usually like, this is the area I was hit. This is the area that I'm holding on to as if they were cut there, you know. But this one, I wanted to bring it up because it did, you know, it started to circle online and, you know, it was questionable. People wondered about it. And I think that anytime that sort of thing comes up, you absolutely want to explore it. The bigger issue, I would say, with and I won't necessarily say issue, but the bigger thing that I wanted to bring up as far as how that goes is, how do you move forward when something like that happens? When you if you're a business, is it your job to report that you didn't think? Sorry, I'm just going through my notes as I talk. If you run the company and that comes up, are you obligated to make a statement on it? And in this case, I actually think they should. I do think that it's going to be a rare opportunity that you would see something like this happen. Like, I mean, I wouldn't expect anybody to really kind of emerge and say, well, this is what I believe happened on said card or whatever. I more would think, or, you know, especially on this Chinese card, I'm more likely to lean that they're not going to say anything, just kind of say, hey, you know, our super fighter got big time win, you know, and that's the end of it, and that kind of deal. But it goes a long way if you can take that next step. And I just don't see it happening. So for people who are wondering for them to, or would like them to address it, and maybe they have addressed it, and maybe I'm cutting them short. But when it happened, I just kind of said, hey, you know, he's on a roll, you know, that's another big win for him. And that's a stoppage loss for Kim. And at first, you know, I praised Jing Ling. And secondly, I just brought it up to some people and said, hey, what do you guys think when you saw it? We discussed it for a little bit on Twitter. If you guys go through my Twitter wall, you'll see that. And I think that's going to be the end of it. You know, I don't see any forced rematches or anything like that happen. I just think that that's kind of how that story came about and how that story is going to end. I really believe that the I really believe that a bigger issue in China right now is the Yilong decisions, and once again he gets one over Marco Piquet. And the thing that's making this even worse, he's the biggest TV draw. He gets huge ratings every time he competes. It's starting to, you know, come off like he's a national hero, but he will come off to the rest of the world as a national fraud unless he starts putting together enough offense to get his hands raised. The jokes online are like, you know you lost before you competed. You know that there's a lean towards him scorecards wise no matter what he does. Some of these fights, the Bacall fight was so bad, it'd be one thing if he was at least throwing a lot of offense, if he's at least trying to throw, and maybe you could say, oh well, he threw the most offense and so on, but he just spends portions of the round literally just getting beat up. And it's almost like it's been agreed upon that if you don't win by knockout or if you don't knock him down, he wins by default. I don't know if that's in the contract, but that's how it's starting to feel. You can't have that moving forward. That's bad for the sport. It's completely different than what we have with Jilang, because Jilang, it seems like he's competitive and really doing well. Like, a lot of people didn't like the Ilias Belay decision last year, but I thought it was competitive. I thought Jilang was in the fight. So when that one didn't, that one went his way, I was like, hey, I can make an argument for this guy winning. I can't make an argument for Yilong winning some of these decisions. So it's not good for the sport. That's the reputation that you have. So people who get the fight, they're just kind of taking it as a trip to China. And the thing that you're going to get is something like what they had in Super Combat, where Jackson goes out there and not really looking to compete, and he's looking to go down right away the first time, he gets hit with anything. And they do a count, and they're trying to force him to fight, and he just wanted to go out there for the trip and for the money. And then he literally kind of gets fired, stuff in the ring, that kind of stuff, whatever. And again, I've said you guys before, I could care. I have no remorse for Super Combat on that decision, because Super Combat had some better fighter options and they neglected it, and they went for Jackson because they thought that they'd get a, show-stopping KO for it. And Jackson, that wasn't where his mentality was. He was going to go out there, take a couple shots, go down, and get his check, a la Bob Sapp. And that's kind of what their situation was, with him. If Yilong keeps getting these one-sided or these decisions, despite the fact that he's getting beat up, I think fighters who get that call are going to be like, hey, let me just go out there and be as safe and as conservative as I can. I know I'm not going to get the decision anyways, and collect my check and enjoy my trip to China. You don't want that for your kickboxing brand. So they're going to have to look at the Yilong decisions long and hard. Or worse, they're not going to have to do it at all, because he's still the biggest draw and he's still going to be shown and promoted as this, national hero. So we'll go ahead and get into the meat of what I wanted to talk about. Not going to have a super long show today. I'm going to really get into the glory fights, and then we're going to move on from there. Go ahead and start it off on the undercard, as we have Victor Penta as he takes on Giga Chikadze. I like Chikadze in this one. Pinto's not bad. He's solid fighter, but I always kind of see him more as a middle of the pack kind of guy. Guy who's, you put him on the card, he can, he's a notable name that, will at least, show some resistance. But I don't think that his skill is anywhere where Giga Chikadze's name or skill is, who not only is he doing good things at Kings MMA, but before that he was at, Mike Stem, and he had some fights in it's Showtime, and just too much veteran savvy. I'm fully expecting one of those sharp body kicks to score and give him a KO victory in the first or second round. Not 100% sure it's still going down, but I believe it is, so I'm going to talk about it like it is. Daniela Graf to take on Zoila Frosto. Zoila Frosto is got the big low kick whip. She's got the combination style when she lets it go. She's got a good high kick. Graf did not impress me in her first one. Just didn't show me enough offensive volume. It was a forgettable bout. So when I see that Frosto get this opportunity, I want to see if Frosto can build on it. Frosto is one of many people who was not able to compete in the women's tournament last year. Tournament field in the beginning I thought was just okay. And then it went from just okay to losing so many names, and just made it was what it was at the end. So I think Frosto, if she can get into her low kick game, she could have success here. If she's a little bit too stagnant, Daniela will find her with offense, will find her with the boxing. But I still lean Frosto. I think that she's got the the better low kick whip. I think that she's the better fighter at this stage. Good coach and Fitzgibbons. I think that, this should be an entertaining bout, and I got Frosto winning it. I'm hoping that it's an entertaining bout. It just depends on how much Graf brings offense. So if you guys are wondering what that sound is, I'm actually located in a hotel that's right next to a Fox Sports studio, and there's some other TV show or like TV headquarters. It's across the street from us, and an airplane or a helicopter just took off from it. So I don't know if you guys heard that sound, but I apologize. I just wanted to fill you in on just where I am recording the show. Next card, we've got Jonathan Deniz as he takes on Thomas Monzi. I think this is a really good fight for Mosny. I got Mosny winning this one. Deniz is a solid guy who's had some good fight opportunities in the past, and he's going to get some of the best guys in the world. I like Mosny, tall guy. He showed me moments in flash. He just didn't show me the KO pop. He can kickbox though, so I got him winning a decision in this one. Should be a pretty entertaining affair. If Deniz can let the hands go a little bit, add some drama to it, because Deniz should be able to be the one of the two that's throwing the punch, or who's got the KO pop. Of the two, you'd pick him. But Thomas Monzi, slick, long. He can score in weird spots and sometimes get the offense that it takes to put someone down. I've got Mosny here. Next fight in the card I want to talk about is Mike LeMaire as he goes against Warren Thompson. Warren Thompson he gets a lot of opportunities. He's not had a lot of success. I cannot recall a victory that he's had in my memory, but he keeps getting the call. He keeps working hard. He keeps trying. LeMaire, big, strong guy, can be stiff, but he should come with enough offense and enough low kicks to slow Thompson down. And I got LeMaire winning. I definitely think that LeMaire can put Thompson down if he lets the hands go. But more than anything, I think Thompson is just a guy who's tough, wants to go the distance, will go in there. And Thompson should have gone down to low kicks when he fought against Myron Dennis, but he just stayed up, tough guy, stayed in it, kept battling, kept fighting, and got to the final bell. So let's see what this fight becomes. But LeMaire, with the eye test, looks like he would win this one. Then we go to the last fight on the Glory Series Fight Pass portion of it, and we've got Robert Van Roosmalen defending his title against Matt Embry. The reason why I think that this will be entertaining, just because I think Embry is going to feel very early on that his best shot is to land something with his hands. But as far as skill goes and the ability to put away kickboxing rounds consistently, it's Robin Van Roosmalen. This is an easy call for me. Like, if I go into a fight and you say, who's going to win? A guy who's really got to rely on the KO pop to get his hands raised, or the guy who can put away the most rounds? I'm usually going to lean on the guy who can win the most rounds. 9 times out of 10, the guy would have to show me exceptional KO power for me to think that he's going to have an Anuat type, presence in the Muay Thai kickboxing world and say, okay, despite the fact that I know the other guy's going to appoint him, Anuat's the man. Anuat will catch him and drop him. I don't see Embry as an Anuat type. I see him as a solid kickboxer, Muay Thai fighter, who has a ton of experience. He's been in there with some of the best in the world. He's fought Sanchai. He's fought all over the world. I think that he's a good fighter, but I think the flow and consistency in kickboxing scoring goes to Robin Van Roosmalen, who, had success and has dealt with power in a higher weight class. But the combination flow, the consistency, the biting down in the mouthpiece, the counter returns, I got Robin Van Roosmalen in a entertaining fight that I think it, at minimum it'll go to the fourth round, but should be entertaining as long as Embry has a couple moments where he cracks Roosmalen, because Roosmalen can go down. He can go down, no question about it. Zvik Kyria put him down, but he got right back up, went right back to work. So I got Robin Van Roosmalen winning and retaining the featherweight championship. We move on into the four-man tournament field. Got some familiar names, got some names that people aren't as familiar with. First fight I'm going to talk about is Johan Kangulu as he takes on Konstantin Kuzin. I've only seen Kuzin fight a few times, not enough to be sold on him, especially not over Kangulo, who's still training, with Mike's gym. He gets in there with some of the best in the world on a regular basis. I really think that he is a top five kickboxer in his weight class. I think that he's going to have a lot of success in this one, and I lean on him to get a victory here, if not by stoppage. Next fight we have is Kareem Ben-Mansour, as he gets a fight over Alan Shineson. Alan Shineson, again, not a guy who I've seen a lot of. I've seen a lot of Kareem Ben-Mansour. I think that he's going to win this one. I think he may be even a stoppage. I guess I'll lean decision here, and that sets up Ben-Mansour versus Kangulo. I would like a little bit more diversity at the top, but I think Yoan Kangulo beats Ben-Mansour, and he puts himself in position to get another title shot at the welterweight, or another shot at the welterweight title. As I mentioned before, you know, they got a, they really should consider going, you know, seeing if Kashinko's interested. I would like a few different names in this division, because seeing Kangulo and seeing Ben-Mansour, I feel like they're almost recycling the same four-man tournament. That's why eight-man tournament, I think, works better for them, even if you want to do the eight-man for a contender spot. Kangulo wins this tournament, moves on to face Cedric Dombe. If they don't do the, you know, I'm pretty sure they're going to schedule a Nicky Holtzkin Dombe rematch before this, but Kangulo should win this four-man tournament. Brings us to the top of the card, Guto Inocente, as he goes on D'Angelo Marshall. Legit fight. A legit fight. Guto Inocente, to me, is flash more than substance right now. He actually showed me some pretty good kickboxing when I looked at his fights in Brazil. When he came over to the States, he just became a trick player. You know what I'm saying? Just guy who does spinning kicks. Superman, just no consistent offense. D'Angelo Marshall has the ability to put together consistent offense. Trained in Holland for a long time. He was with Lucien Corbin for a little bit. He's been with a couple gyms over in Holland. I'm not sure where he's officially stationed at the moment, but he had a lot of fight opportunities for Super Combat, and he'll be hardened and he'll be ready to go. I am leaning D'Angelo Marshall to get the victory here. It won't be an upset for me, because D'Angelo Marshall has scored consistent offense on a high level on a regular basis. Inocente, I wouldn't rule it out whatsoever that he gets a decision that I'm not a fan of, because sometimes, whatever reason it is, over here in the States, there are judges that aren't scoring consistent offense, and they're wooed by flash. You saw it when Piotr and the Denise Kjellholt. Kjellholt scoring consistent offense throughout. Piotr gets a, you know, couple, you know, teeps to the face and a couple spinning jump kicks or whatever, and in your mind, I'm like, that's not going to be enough to sway the judges. The consistent work is clearly coming from Denise Kjellholt. I was wrong. Completely wrong. Denise Kjellholt was lost on that card because they are moved by flash. And the last time Inocente fought, he won the cards moving by flash. And I'm not the biggest fan of that. I want to see consistent kickboxing work, or I want to see a knockdown or a KO. If I don't get that, if I just get you doing, you know, trick shots the whole time, I'm going to lean towards the other person who's putting the consistent offense in. I think Marshall can do that, and if the judges do their job, we should have a victory for D'Angelo Marshall. We now move to the main event. Jason Wilnes, a guy who had all the potential in the world, all the skill in the world, toughness in the world. He gets a first title defense against Israel Adesanya, one of the future stars of the kickboxing sport, a guy who can sell himself, a guy who does his work on social media extremely, extremely well, selling himself at every turn, jokes at every turn, just a guy who we want in the sport. There's one thing I say about Cedric Dombe and Adesanya, they are selling themselves, and that's vital to this game. The thing for me is going to come down to how much can Jason Wilnes take advantage of the low kick when Adesanya's in the orthodox stance. Adesanya, of course, switches stances all the time. He's got sneaky offense, and he's tough to hit consistently, you know, because he moves just enough so you can hit him, but really he doesn't sit there and eat like four or five in a combo. He'll usually take one of the shots, maybe two of the shots, get out of there, find his own range. Doesn't throw with a lot of heat, but finds the right moment to score, and that's what puts people in their butt. You know, it's rare that I see him, you know, have a Raul Katanas, you know, load up and then drop a guy. That's not how Adesanya plays it. He's slick. He switches stances. He reads you. He reads your body language. He looks to counter in between your offense. He looks to score his kicks in different variations. He's not a guy who really batters the low kick on one side. He'll just hit you on one side for a little bit, then pop the inside leg, then hit the back rear leg. Mixes boxing in. That's his style. Wilnes, he's going to bite down his mouthpiece. He's going to come forward. He's going to eat some kicks here and there. He's fine. He's Dutch because they're used to it. He's going to go combo low kick back. If you give him room, he's going to walk you down, get you on the ropes, let his hands go big, drop the low kick. He throws with the kind of aggression that you would expect from a guy who's at the top of the division. And You know, who knows what that fight would have been with Simon Marcus had Simon Marcus not, you know, dropped his hands and started playing the game a little bit. Willness was able to take advantage of him and hit him. Adesanya won't play it like that, but he will have moments of flash, hands down, playing with things. The question is the future right now? I'm leaning in a close fight, I'm leaning Adesanya. You know, I still think Willness can do it, but I think if Adesanya plays with the fight in the southpaw stance a lot, I think Willness will be discouraged from going after the back rear leg. And if he does, Adesanya will read his body language and score counters in between. A sharp knee here and there, one of the clinch, just slow Willness down, eat into that explosion, and then pick the fight up as you go down the rounds, 3, 4, 5. So I lean for Adesanya to be the and new glory middleweight champion. And, you know, after that, there's a lot of interesting fights that could go his way, but he's a guy that we want to be watching in the future for quite some time. So there were a couple things that I wanted to mention as far as the kickboxing world goes. It's important to me that when people hear the podcast and they hear people, you know, who are really getting behind it, that they understand that we do this because we love it and we're really excited about the opportunity of you guys seeing a lot of these athletes compete at a high level. So I wanted to shout out a couple people who, you know, right now are putting in that effort, you know, whether you know it or not. I really like the work that they are doing. First, shout out to Anoop Hathi, who is got a podcast that he's trying to get going every 2 weeks, you know, not just once a week, but he's trying to get it going every two, and twice a week. And he's been doing interviews. He's going to give you a different look. Every podcast has kind of got their own little flavor to it. But Anoop, go ahead and follow him at K1 Anoop, K1, capital A-N-O-O-P. Follow him on Twitter, and he does a podcast where he does mostly, he does regular kickboxing talk, but he really focuses on interviews. So shout out to Anoop out there doing big things, getting kickboxing out there. And then, of course, I want to shout out the guys at Liverkick, you know, Dave Walsh and John C., are putting together a kickboxing podcast. They've done a few now. They are also on iTunes. Go out there and listen to these podcasts and get behind us. You know, get behind us. We're doing our best to get kickboxing to you on a regular basis. We love it. We love the sport. We really want you guys to fall in love with it the way we fell in love with it. And when I first got into this game, there was no kickboxing podcast for me. You know, like I did a kickboxing podcast. I started what? 2007. So now I've started. That's just freaking me out. Like 8 years ago was when I first started this. I didn't even realize it was that long. But if it's 2017, the first one that I did was in, I want to say 2009, maybe 2010. But that's how long ago it was that I did this. And to see them say, hey, we've got enough kickboxing content, I really want to get it out there. Want people to sit down and focus on it and check it out. I am excited that more people are getting into kickboxing. Sorry about that. There was a little glitch. I hope I fixed it. But in the end, I just wanted to finish with, I'm excited that more people are getting into kickboxing. So I am done with the kickboxing, the year in 2016, year in kickfighting highlight. I'm going to go ahead and give that to liverkick.com to post for Monday, but I'm done with it. I was excited the way it came together. I've got more KOs and knockdowns in this one, I think, than any other that I've ever done. I really focus on it a lot. A lot of you guys are Thai Stadium focused, and you wanted me to get into it. And I tell you this straight up. I thought in the year 2015 I did a good job of focusing on stadium stuff. I thought in the year 2016, the first half of the year I focused on it, the second half of the year I didn't do it as much. And that is my failure to you. I definitely want to bring you more stadium action. I hope that I made it up in this highlight because I gave you a lot of full rules Muay Thai KOs, a lot more than I've ever put in a highlight before. So I will have that on Monday. So I definitely want you guys to go check that out. This is a smaller show. I'm going to go ahead and end it with, I guess I'll give you guys a fun story. I may have said this story before, but I was covering Champions versus Champions for World Muay Thai Magazine. And I had one of the most interesting things happen to me. And I was like, you know what? One day I'm going to share this story in the podcast. I may have done it before in the past. New listeners, you get to hear it for the first time. Old listeners, you get to revisit it with me. So I'm there covering it. And that's one of my coolest opportunities that let me know that I could be a trainer or let me know that I could do something in the sport. Because I go out there and I always bring my gear just in case I get the opportunity to train. And as soon as I got there, Ernesto Hoost was sitting in the lobby with Paul Sawinski. And Champions vs. Champions 2 had a full card, but the main reason why I was there was for Tyrone Spong and Nathan Carnage Corbett. That was like the big fight at that time. And I get there, and I see those guys hanging out, and I talk to them for a little bit and say, hey, is there any way I could watch you guys do your warm-up, you know, later on? And I brought some gear just in case I get the opportunity to train. And then they were like, yeah, sure, you can come around. And then Ernesto was like, yeah, let me hold pad for you. And I worked with him for a little bit, and he was like, you got it. He's like, you're strong. He goes, you've got to come to Holland. You've got to come to Holland and train with me full time. And it meant the world to me at the time. And I didn't think anything of it, but it meant the world to me. And I still had a full-time job, and I was making good money, and I was like, man, I don't know if I want to pursue it. I was already, you know, I think I was 29 years old, 28, 29, I'm not sure. But I'd gotten to a place where I was finally financially secure, and if you grew up poor, that means a lot. So later that day, Ernesto Hoost, the first person that told me that Michael Jackson died. That's how I remember this day. You know, we hung out, and, you know, I did interviews with people and so on. And then the next day, we had the Champions versus Champions. We're in a, you know, there are a bunch of tents, and the fighters are all in different tents as their corners. And again, it's in Jamaica, so it's outside and it's hot. And I'll never forget, they had this huge advertising tarp right in the middle of it. And the tarp was like, it was pretty much a slip and slide. And once the guys got sweaty, they were slipping all over the place. Andre Kulibin was going against Musab Amrani in the first bout of the night, and they had slipped on the mat so much that they just didn't fight in the middle anymore, and they just tried to fight in the corners. You would think that that would favor Musab Amrani, but in terms, it actually favored Andre Kulibin, who was able to stay slick, score some good offense. Kulibin had a great career. Like, a lot of people look at his career and they think, man, you know, he wasn't able to beat, you know, the Sanchez of the world, and he fought Bocao not too long ago, but he got to fight everybody. You know, he really is a fighter who had a great career, great run, and that's, you know, I'm telling you something that happened, so, you know, 8 years ago, or excuse me, 6 years ago, was it 2011, I want to say that's when that happened. So anyways, after that fight was done, they got hip to the score, and they took off that tarp. So when they were taking off the tarp, I go to the back, and it turns out they're doing random drug testing. Paul Sawinski was picked to do one of the drug tests. They go up to Paul. Paul, you know, pees in the cup, and he sets it down, or he gives it back to the guy. And the guy then turns, and he sets it down. And then the guy starts writing something down, and he looks around, and he forgets where he sets the cup down. And then he goes, where did you put the test sample? And then Ernesto Hoost said, it's right by you. And the guy goes, where? And then Ernesto Hoost walks over to it, and he points to it, and he goes, it's right here. And then the guy turns, and he thinks that Ernesto Hoost has done something to the cup, because Ernesto knew where the cup was, and he didn't, even though he was the guy who put it there. Ernesto never touched the cup. So as soon as that happened, to the best of my recollection, either he never touched the cup, or he grabbed the cup and gave it to the guys, one of those two, but for sure didn't tamper with it, and for sure didn't put it down there. The guy who took the sample, he's the one who set it down there. So then the guy starts freaking out. He's like, you guys did something bad, you're gonna give me a new sample, and he's like going crazy and that kind of deal. And they're like, well, calm down, we'll do another test, we didn't cheat you, you know, that kind of deal, whatever. Paul Sawinski then goes out there, you know, after the fight card was over with, the stretch of it had some pretty decent KOs. Marco Piquet had a big KO over Sean Wright. There was Ekeboom had a comeback victory over, I am forgetting his name right now. I can't remember. Anyways, Paul Sawinski gets a victory that night. And after he gets his victory, if you ever know a lot of fighters, as soon as they get out of the cage, first thing they do is they got to go to the bathroom. Commissioned people are nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. So after he, you know, gets this victory, goes to the bathroom, they then come up to him like 10 minutes later, like, hey, we need you to pee in the cup. He says, man, where were you guys? I was looking for you guys. I had to go real bad, and I went. So then he's sitting there waiting to go, and they're just like following him and badgering him the whole way. And they're just saying, it's your pee, you're responsible for it. And he goes, it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. He goes, like, you guys were, I gave it to you. Once they put it in your hands, you're responsible for it. But they just kept saying they were just adamant that he had done something. So then he gets more upset. He starts kicking over. They got these plastic chairs out for people to watch, and he's kicking over chairs and walking over. It was one of the most hilarious things ever. And Wrestler Who's, of course, it's late, so he's like, all right, come on, man. We just got to get this test and get it over with. So finally, Paul Swinski took the test, and I just remember thinking, what a crazy moment. What a crazy story. I wish you guys had been there just to see how upset Paul Swinski got, but even funnier, how much they were following him around, adamant that he had done something when he clearly did not do anything to this cup. And it was just the guy set it down, and he just wouldn't admit fault. He wouldn't admit that he put it down. He didn't know where he put it down at, so he had to make him do the test all over with, and they wouldn't admit that they weren't waiting for him like they said they would. It was a crazy moment. So just wanted to share that kickboxing story with you guys. It was a lot of fun. I will be back next week, and this is my promise to you. I'm going to do everything in my power. It is the 19th right now, the 19th of January, and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure I give you a podcast every single week at minimum through the month of March. Every single week, I won't fail you. If I don't have enough content, I'll tell you some stories. I'll talk about major fights in kickboxing. I will do something, but I will make sure that I do not fail you guys again. I will be back on my A game with kickboxing. I started a boxing podcast with Ryan Scalia, Boxing Hipster podcast. It is up on SoundCloud. So between the two of them, I'll do my best. It doesn't take me much time to do these things. The girl that I'm dating, who it's going in a good direction right now, she seems to be okay with me doing this podcast thing. So I have no plans on it ending. You know, I say that now. Who knows what happens when we get married? Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you so much for following kickboxing. Thank you for your patience with me. And I really do hope you enjoy the kickboxing or kick fighting, the year in kick fighting highlight that I've done, because I really put a lot of work into it. And I love the kickboxing sport so much that I want you guys to go through the highlight and relive the moments and say, this is why I love this sport. So thank you so much for my Muay Thai kickboxing followers. Continue to follow me. Check out Anoop's podcast and definitely Liver Kicks.com's podcast. Thanks, everybody. God bless. Have a good one. Peace.